Network, proudly presents the Jay's Blade Show. With your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as special guests. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for introducing us in such fine style. I am Jay Flemmer of CyberGolf, and you're listening to Jay's Blaze on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Big thank you to all of our sponsors. Jay's Blaze is brought to you by Spring 44 Vodka. It's the Colorado spring water that makes it the freshest vodka ever. Spring 44, spring for some today. And by Swifties, all-American Irish pubs all across I-90 and I-87. It's Swifties. All right, everybody, we got a great show lined up for you today. We are celebrating coming back from the Anderson Memorial at Wingfoot. Yep, 4 days at Wingfoot, home to 5 U.S. Opens, 2 PGA Championships, 2 Women's Opens, and 2 U.S. Amateurs, and 2 really ultra-fine golf courses, too, the West Course and the East Course. We'll be talking a lot about the tournament, and we'll be talking a lot about amateur golf today and the amateur golf circuit. We're going to talk a little bit about Chambers Bay and the upcoming U.S. Open, since we're only a week away. We'll have to get our guests' thoughts on that. And so, without any further ado, please welcome the 2015 Anderson Memorial Champions, all the way from Elizabeth Manor Golf and Country Club in Portsmouth, Virginia. It's our good friends Roger Newsom and Adam Horton. Welcome, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
How was the drive back this year?
It was a little more tolerable than last year.
Yeah.
That we had discussed that one of the storylines was that you guys drove home last year after losing a really close match to the team that eventually won the tournament, the Sioux Falls Marine Golf Club, that you thought you had a chance to not only beat them in that match, but win this tournament. And so tell us a little bit about the feelings that you had driving away last year and then how much different it was this year. You know, give us an inside scoop in the sedan.
It was 100% better. It was 100% better. It's a 7-hour drive home with the trophy versus 7-hour drive without the trophy was just incredible.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, last year, it was 7 hours kind of thinking about, you know, what one shot could have gone the other way in turn of events as opposed to this year, you know, having been able to pull out the win and savor it for the entire ride home.
So set the stage for us a little bit, okay? Tell us about the match that you had with the two fellows from Lima. You know, how it went, where it went wrong, and then tell us a little bit about how you use that as motivation this year to improve.
I'd have to leave it to Adam because I'm getting older and I can't remember the whole match. I just remember they hit it about a foot from the hole on the last hole and beat us on the last hole. I blocked out everything else. I wouldn't feel the pain.
He is correct. That is that's how, you know, it ended. As for the match itself, I'd say it was a lot like our semifinal match that we had this year, a lot of back and forth. If I recall, I don't think either team got more than, you know, one or two up in the match the whole entire day, and we were all square probably for the last 4 holes or so until what transpired on the last hole of the West Course.
And it's great for you to bring up the very next question I was going to bring up, which was the match in the quarterfinal against the Floyd brothers, where it looked as though it was going to be deja vu all over again. So walk us through, set us back on the 17th hole first, Adam and Roger, and tell us where the match was standing and, you know, give us all of the dramatics of that 18th hole.
I'll let Adam.
I believe we were 1 up in the match heading into the 17th hole against the Floyd brothers, and
they
had just won the 16th hole.
Yeah, and Robert hit the green. Was it Robert or Raven hit the green?
It's tough to tell the two of them apart. They are both Ray Floyd's sons and look exactly like him.
I believe it was Robert was the one who hit the green, and Raymond's came up just off the front right edge. And Roger and I both missed left of the green, which was probably about the only place you really can't miss it.
It is a murderous green to miss, with the exception of, I guess, if there's something that is a reasonable shot. It's an uphill putt from the apron. But trying to pitch up to that green from either from behind or especially from the left is murder. But if we recall, there was 2-3 putts by the Floyd brothers. They could have tied the match, and they didn't, and that allowed you to stay one up on 18.
Yeah, well, he hit his first putt about 3 feet by the hole and got above the hole, and everybody knows, and you learn the hard way, don't be above the hole, because in our match, in our semifinal match yesterday, the guys did the same thing. They hit it above the hole on their first putt or on his chip, but he was 3 feet above the hole, and you have no control. And so they missed that, but then he hit one of the greatest shots out of the trees and rough on 18 that I'd ever seen.
Oh, yeah, that was a bit of deja vu that we were talking about, that, you know, he was completely surrounded by overhanging trees in clingy rough to a tough pin on a potato chip green with a match in the balance against a ruthless opponent, okay? Tougher things, you know, exist out there but not reported by reliable sources. And what does he do? He goes and puts it 18 inches from the cup using the backstop of the green perfectly. It actually danced around the cup before hitting to the backboard and then sort of swerving back as all of the rollout and the Linfoot greens will do. So tell us how you responded.
Well, I it was something clicked in me, and it was I could see last year all over again. And it happened to me in a Virginia tournament when I won the Virginia Open. I had lost a state amateur about two weeks before. And it just, I don't know, it got to my core, and I hit that 7-iron, and it got up there about, 3 or 4 feet from the hole. And I knew if I made it, it was over with. So that's what we did.
It was a clutch shot a la Angel Cabrera at the Masters in 2012. Your thoughts on it, Adam? You know, take us back to the middle of the fairway after watching one of the Floyd brothers stiff at that close.
Yeah, I have to agree with Roger. You know, when we saw his ball come to rest, and we couldn't tell exactly how close it was, but, you know, the reaction from the crowd made it seem like he was in there in a gimme range, and you kind of feel a little, you know, sickening in the pit of your stomach that, you know, this could be slipping away. Yeah, I hit a pretty solid shot in there about 15 feet left of the hole, and, you know, we talked with Roger, and you got the right club, and, you know, just could be aggressive with it because you knew you had the backstop, that even if it got a little past the pin, that it would come back. And, you know, Roger's a great player, and, you know, great players step up and make great shots when the time matters, and that's what he did.
And that propelled you into the semifinals, and it will go down in the annals of this tournament as one of the great, great matches in the last decade. You upset heavily favored and combined 5-time Anderson champions, Parker Smith and Dan Crockett. Now, tell us about the match. Walk us through from 1 to 18.
Well, we got it in the fairway off the first tee. Actually, Adam did, and I hit my drive a little bit to the left, but hooked the 7-iron up there about 10 feet from the hole. So we tied one, Adam?
Yeah, we did, and I believe Roger made about a 8-footer on number 2, and they missed a couple of short putts. We won the second hole with par. I made a birdie putt on 3 to put us 2 up,
Now, that's a good stretch of holes right there, okay? The second hole is a 502-yard par 4. Well, it only plays as a par 5 for the members. But I found it most interesting when Dave Bosha, who partnered with Joe Saladino, that same Dave Bosha that's the reigning Travis Invitational champion, played that hole driver. So how difficult was that hole all week?
It's a tough hole.
It seemed like it got, as the week went on, it got harder and harder. And I remember in our stroke play round, I was able to hit a 5-iron into the green, and then I believe it might have been the first round of match play, I was hitting a 3-wood into the green because of the wind direction.
That's my secret weapon all week is Adam's got an extra 20 yards when he needs it, and I don't have it, so. So I rely on him on the longer holes, and he came through on 2 and 17, and you know, he just got it done.
All right, so Adam and Roger, tell us now about how, were you at all affected by the fact that these guys had 5 Anderson Memorial titles between them, and, you know, here you are playing in the semifinals?
Well, I'm glad I didn't know it was 5. I was thinking it was 3, so maybe that would have worked out more against me. But
a combined 5. 3 for Parker, 2 for Dance.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I've played in enough tournaments, and Adam, I know what Adam would do. Adam and I have competed against each other for years in Virginia. I know what he can do, and you got to have that mental side. And you know, I think between he and I, when the things get sticky or sticky wicked, you know, we bear down. We're the two guys you want to go to Iraq with you, and we're going to all come back alive. Yeah. For me, it was when we got to about number 13 that it really, there was a kind of a defining moment almost.
And that defining moment was?
Let's see, we had the 13, and I believe we had just won the 12th hole to go 2 up, and Roger and I had both hit it in there inside of 8 feet for birdie. I believe Parker had hit it on the green to about 20 feet, and he rolled in his putt, and in typical match play fashion, Roger and I were unable to convert our birdie putts, and just like that, you know, we went from possibly looking to go 3 up to only being 1 up, and the match kind of tightens up real quick.
And so then, but you did exactly what great athletes do. You responded. So tell us a little bit about how you, you know, fought it back and pushed back at Parker and Dan.
I believe, you know, we have the number 14. I believe Roger made a good up and down there for par. We went into the 15th hole, and the 15th hole in the East Course, although it's short, it's got one very severe green that is hard to, you know, judge the right distance and get it in the right position. I was able to finally get my approach shot to the pin, although I got a little above the hole and had to be a little cautious with the birdie putt. But it was just, you know, we kept from there on out, we were trading shots back and forth with them. And until we were able to pull it out on the last, on the 17th hole.
And now tell us a little bit about the final, which was a little anticlimactic. You finished up winning in 6 and 5.
Well, you say anticlimactic. The problem was is I thought we were going one more hole, and I was disappointed. I was getting ready to make a putt for birdie, and they told me the match is over with. Adam had made a par and closed him out dorming. So I was in shock. So I was still in the mode of, I was like, man, I got to make this putt. Adam was going, Doc, come out of it, where it's over with.
Yeah, I was kind of excited because, you know, Roger told me to go ahead and tap it in my, you know, 1.5, 2-foot par putt. And I just kind of think, I was like, well, that's really nice of him. He's going to let me, you know, make the clinching putt, he didn't even know the match was over yet. So.
I wouldn't let him put it if I'd known that.
But, if he had known that, he probably would have told me to mark him. So.
Taking a run at him himself. But it was a bit of a rout. You know, you got ahead and then you put the hammer down. There was a shining moment, though, for the other team of honesty and sportsmanship and you know, great golf ethos. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, as I said in the, I guess the speech I gave at the awards banquet, Chris, we were on the ninth, the ninth hole. And we've got a regular USGA official who's officiating our group.
Sure, you have Gene Westman of the Met Golf Association officiating. And by the way, the player, Chris, is Chris Devlin, son of Bruce Devlin, the famous
Bruce
pro.
Yeah, so Chris, he you know, his partner's missed a putt for made bogey, and Chris is up there to make par. Chris, you know, he addresses the putt, and he sees the ball move. And none of us saw it move. And he looks up at us and goes, guys, the ball moved. And I even said to him, I said, I'm looking right at it. I didn't see it move. He goes, it moved. He goes, I got to be honest. I mean, that was kind of the end of the match, because I knew from there, when we're three up, that's where the hammer was coming down. And Adam birdied 10, you know, and I birdied 11, 12, and so Adam and I wanted to win this thing. Yeah.
Well, you definitely had a great deal of intensity. You know, I really had a ball listening to your post-round interview after the semifinal match about how you reacted when Ray Floyd Jr. put that ball 18 inches from the cup when you said, I am not going to lose this match.
Yeah, that happened. That, like I said, that happened 1 year to me, and it was the same. It was deja vu. It was the same thing. But Adam's been there too. Adam's lost some state amateurs where he was really close. I have too. So we've both been there, and we know what it takes. You know, you're not gonna win them all, but when you got a chance to pounce, we pounce.
Now, tell us all a little bit about what your thoughts are on Wingfoot West and Wingfoot East.
I think they're both just truly amazing golf courses. They both have different aspects that make them great. The West course is just a brute of a golf course. You know, it opens up with a lot of length, and it just never seems to, you know, let up from the get-go. The East, what it lacks in length, I think it makes up in character. The green sights, I think, are a little more, you have to be a little more precise with your approach shots and what you're doing around the greens themselves.
Jay,
Roger, your thoughts.
I need to find a driver for the West course that goes 25 yards longer. And problems solved there, and then the East course, like, and I'd say what Adam said, it's the greens are a little bit, it's got a little bit more bend to it, it's probably of the two, I think most people would probably say it's a little bit more fun golf course to play, but the West is just the true test of golf. It's just mono, and let's see what you got.
Here are my thoughts. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, Adam.
Yeah, having played, you know, we played the match play on the West last year, and having played the match play on the East this year, I think the East actually provides a better match play venue, as it, you know, it allows for more birdies to be made. It's got a few shorter holes and more scoreable opportunities than, you know, I think in our match last year in the West, very few holes were won with birdies. They were mostly won with pars.
Pars.
Well, they did have it set up awful tough, and it was the sixth round in 4 days. You know, I've seen guys by rounds five and six get, you know, ultra tired, and say the Travis, which only goes five rounds, or the Crump, which goes six, or the Anderson, which goes six. Very, very, very difficult to stay energized for that long. Do you think that the advantage is with the younger guys?
I mean, I'm 51, so I think there's a little bit of an advantage, but also...
I was waiting for you to say that.
yeah, because, you know, you're looking forward to having a drink at the end of the film, but I would say when you're playing well or if you're scoring well and you're winning matches, you get that energy and you're ready to go again. I mean, you know, it's if you play badly, then you're down. But if you win, you know, you're ready to go another 18. At least I am. I'm ready to go. You know, put me in,
yeah.
Coach. Yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Now,
I mean,
getting back to our differences between the East Course and the West Course, I find that the East greens, by and large, are narrower. There's some real tight approaches in there. Holes like 17 and 13 and a few others with those, you know, pushed up greens and then sort of smooshed together from the sides. So you get a long rectangle almost, so a little bit of an oblique angle. 17 especially like that. I find those things a little harder to hit just because they're a little smaller, too. A few exceptions aside, like the 18th, which is ginormous, made smaller, though, by the little swales and bowls within the putting surface.
I agree with that. The course, the greens on the West Course, by and large, seem to be a little more expansive, I guess. And the ones on the East are definitely smaller, but it helps in the fact that, I guess, that you're usually hitting shorter clubs into those greens, but they are also a little more severe when you miss them. And, you know, the 17th green is a very interesting hole. It is it's a long par 3 and a very difficult green to hit.
Roger, your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I'd say, yeah, I think the redo of the East Course, I think there's some, from what the members said, I think they flattened out some of the areas a little bit more, so they have more green or pin positions. And the West Course right now, there are places on the greens that if you put your ball, you've got no chance at all. And if you watch people hitting into 18 on the West, you can just watch the balls. I mean, if you don't hit it in within a 10 foot spot, if that pin is over to the right, you're going to be off the green and down the rough. And I think that, you noticed, the greens are narrow on the East. They're more undulated on the West. And, so it'll be interesting to see what they do to the West Course greens for the upcoming U.S. Open. Gil Hance is going to come in and I'm sure they're going to have to do something to increase a little bit of the pin position for a U.S. Open.
Now, the other thing I like about the West greens is that if you don't hit with it, that 10-foot circle you were talking about, you're over in another swale in another quadrant of the green, and you get yourself a difficult putt. And a putt that probably breaks significantly, and we say significantly, a foot or more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, and Adam wants to go play Pine Valley, so anybody wants to take him, you know, call him. But if you play Pine Valley, you'll find out it's the same kind of greens. You know, you can putt from swale to swale, and you thought you hit a good shot, but it's amazing.
Well, I'll be happy to say, at least Wings will be happy. I love Pine Valley. I think those greens are phenomenal. I think the golf course is phenomenal. I think the swales are deeper and more pronounced than Wingfoot. Few exceptions aside, like number 10 at Pine Valley, and a few other places, perhaps number 8. Now, you guys are from Elizabeth Manor Golf and Country Club in Portsmouth, Virginia. Tell us about your home club.
Well, it's a Dick Wilson golf course designed built in 1954, home of the Eastern Amateur, which has been won by, you know, countless guys that have gone on to the tour, Ben Crenshaw being one of the bigger ones, Andy Bean, Lanny Watkins, Curtis Strange, and Roger Newsom, it's not a Wingfoot. It's a simple kind of pushed up greens, flat, you know, I guess the bunkers are not very deep, so it's an everyday guy's golf course. You can walk.
Well, Dick Wilson tended to build his golf courses like that. You know, famous Quail Ridge down in Florida has those kind of nondescript, simple circles, you know, of both bunkers and greens. The thing about his greens is they have a lot of micro movement to them.
Well, I would say some of our greens have the same thing to them. A lot of little subtle breaks that, you know, over the years, you know, after playing it so many times, you kind of gradually start to learn.
Now, what are some of your favorite holes out on your home course?
On Elizabeth Manor?
Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of partial to the sixth hole. It's a little par three, and it's about 30 yards from my back door. So I can sneak out there, and you know, I'll be sitting in the living room with my wife, and I'll just step out in the garage for a few minutes, and 15 minutes later, she'll look out the back door, and I'm out shifting around. There's a few holes. The eighth hole is a really good, strong par four that kind of doglegs around the lake, and to me, it sets up really well for me because I like to draw the ball. And then I think, you know, the closing stretch on our golf course from 14 to 18 is one of the better closing stretches than I think in all of our area, Tidewater.
Yeah. And if you ask all the pros who ever played there in the Eastern Amateur, they always remember the last five holes. They were the finishing. They were really back before clubs and the balls got so hot. You know, there was the five best holes that they could think of.
What made them so difficult?
I think just the length in general. Like Roger said, you know, when the club was built, you know, they're from the back tees. It's got three par fours that are over 440 yards, a par three that's 210 yards, and the closing par five is 540 yards, I believe. Just back then, it was the length that made them great.
And the greens were really small. You know, the greens were half the tall, a third of the size of some of these greens at Wingfoot. So, you know, you're trying to hit a 4-iron or 3-iron into those greens, and the rough was 4 inches deep, right up to the fringe. They had a time of it.
Now, happily, we're sort of moving away from those sort of architectural principles. The rough at Wingfoot this week was remarkably easy. It didn't come over the tops of my shoes, not even in the very, very, very worst places, perhaps sort of over on 11, but walking through the rough down the regular portion of the golf course, I was remarking about how reasonable they left it and let you go play golf for the title.
Yeah, I want to say, I think it was my caddy, or one of our caddies commented that, you know, if you're going to miss the fairways at Wingfoot, you actually want to miss the fairways by a significant margin because the rough gets thinner. It's a lot thicker right off of the edge of the fairway. But I found, you know, while it wasn't real overly long in length, it was still very thick. So, if you had a ball that slipped down a little bit, it was still kind of difficult to get the club, you know, through
it
the ball and make solid contact.
Yeah, it is juicy, as they say.
That was because Adam missed it just barely off the fairway, so I missed it. I was missing a good margin off the fairway, so the rough was
pretty
good.
Yeah, I don't do a very good job of listening to the caddy.
How good a job does he do at listening to you? The caddy? Roger. How good is Roger? How good does Adam do at listening to you?
He listens. He, you know, but Adam knows how to play golf, and so I didn't have to. We were kind of working together pretty well with putts because, you know, the greens are, you know, it takes a lot to figure it out. And we really were, they call it brother-in-law in it down in Virginia where, you know, we had a lot of holes where one guy was in trouble, the other guy picked it up. And that's, I mean, to win one of these things is what you have to do.
Yep. I think it helps a lot. You know, Roger and I, we both have similar styles of putting when it comes to, you know, pace and speed and how we like to putt. So it's easy for us to look at a putt and pick up on a similar read, as opposed to somebody who might like to putt aggressively and he's, you know, wanting to play less break.
Good teamsmanship. Yeah, giving the other guy an extra boost like that. That's, you know, you led me right into my next question, which is, what is the key to great chemistry between teammates? Go ahead, Roger.
Well, no, I think it's kind of like golf games. I mean, Adam and I have played in a lot of tournaments. You know, we played a lot of Virginia State amateurs against each other. We've played in, you know, other things. We had a battle royale at the Eastern Amateur one year. And, but we know we played.
Who won, by the way?
The good doctor won that year.
By that, everybody, he means Roger. Roger is an ophthalmologist, and actually, he did eye surgery today, actually, so congratulations. It's at least one of the three of us is saving the world in some small way. You know, when I save the world, it's from bad music publishing deals. One last question before we let you guys go. Your favorite hole of the 36 at Wingfoot?
I'd have to say, on the west course, I got to go with hole number 5. I managed to make an eagle in that hole with a stroke play. on the east course, I'm not really sure, honestly. I mean, I like them all. I really like the 13th hole on the east course. It's a short par 3, but, you know, if you don't hit the right shot, you know, it can jump up and get you.
It is a beautiful, tiny green. They call the hole Cameo because it is as prim as a jewel. You know, that diagonally shaped green set up with the ink blot bunker in front of it and a big false front, but very narrow as well. If you go over, you're dead, too.
Yeah, I'd say the first hole on the west course. I think it's set out there beautifully, and maybe it's because I hit a 5-iron, got it on the green when we played that. And then and as bad as it's a Jekyll Hyde opinion, but the 17th hole on the east course.
Oh, sure, a love-hate relationship with that hole.
Yeah. But, you know, we were able to get it up and down a couple times, and that's where a lot of our matches ended, so we were very fortunate.
That one definitely is a showstopper. DJQ is telling me we have time for one more question. So tell us your favorite public venues to play in Virginia so that our listeners can go and play some golf at some of the great places down there.
Well, I'd probably say Riverfront, which is a Tom Doak golf course in Suffolk. Now, I'm a little biased because my brother's the head pro there. But it's a Tom Doak golf course, a really good one. But, you know, we have a lot of good golf courses in Virginia.
And what town is Riverfront in?
Suffolk, Virginia.
Which is near what?
Near Chesapeake, it's just across the river from Williamsburg. If people are
So it's near Royal New Kent, then.
Yes.
All right, Adam, you give us one.
I have to agree with Roger. I like Riverfront. You know, that was fond memories of that. That was my first job when I was 15 years old. And then I also I'm really fond of going up to Williamsburg and playing at the Golden Horseshoe. The gold course up there, I think, is one of the better golf courses in the state.
Sure, it is a famous resort at that, too. Stately and refined is a good way to describe the Golden Horseshoe. I'm a big Mike Stranz fan, so I'm going to tell everybody to go check out Royal New Kent. That's always been a favorite of mine. He used to host these matches where his groundskeeping crew and head pros would play the groundskeeping crew and head pros of Prestwick. And they would rotate back and forth between Royal New Kent and Prestwick, and then Royal County Down would get in there too and play sometimes. And they'd play a game called the 2.5, 2.5, 2.5 game, which is you had to play 18 holes in 2.5 hours. Then you had to eat and drink for 2.5 hours, and then go back and play another 18 holes in 2.5 hours.
Jay, you need to write a book about this.
You know, funny you should say that. We've been doing that for a little while now. We'll have more details on that later, but you read my mind.
Good.
Everybody, we're going to be back with the second half of the show and more great guests. Fellas, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much for having us.
And we will see you next year defending your title.
We're at the end of another great Jay's Play show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to an empty room, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as the theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner, including me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Play show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.